What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of my little podcast. And boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. Everything that happened at UFC 296. Let's just dive right on into it. Before we start talking about main events, Colby Covington, before we start talking about all that stuff, let's just talk about... We had quite a few incredible fights and a couple comebacks. Don't call it, you know, at least I'll call it a comeback. Not comeback wins, but I'm talking about Cody Garbrandt. Sorry, I can't fucking talk. I apologize. But yeah, guys, let's dive right into it. Let's get to the start talking about a little bit of the prelims. Ariana Lipsky and Casey O'Neill. Lipsky, a little bit of an underdog. I picked Lipsky. Don't judge. But is that a horrible pick? Yeah, it was a horrible pick. What we didn't know, though, about Ariana Lipsky is how much her ground game had improved since her last few outings. She looked absolutely incredible in this fight. Her striking is so dangerous. A lot of girls tend to try to grapple with her, and that's where they find a lot of success. But she was able to stay up on the feet. And when she could stay on the feet, boy, she is... absolutely dangerous. She is so much fun to watch on the feet. She hits so hard for a girl that fights at 115 pounds. And Casey O'Neill just really didn't have an answer for the striking. And wasn't really able to do much standing. And got the submission win. Lipsky did. That was what was more shocking to me, was her actually submitting Casey O'Neill. I know she had her hurt. Had her really hurt bad a few times. But... being able to finish her on the ground like that was definitely surprising. I'm curious what that betting line was to have Ariana Lipsky by submission, probably plus like 500 or something like that. Excuse me, it is still early in the morning. I'm recording this at 7:26 a.m. Got my morning coffee here. Delicious. And guys, we're just talking about fights. Love it. You know what else I loved? Cody Garbrandt's performance versus Brian Kelleher. And guys, I know it's Brian Kelleher. He's fun to watch. Brian Kelleher is very, very good, but dare I say Cody's back? That looked like old school Cody Garbrandt. And you know what I loved seeing out of Cody in this fight? He had him hurt bad a couple. Not bad, but you know, he had him hurt. And he started to throw a couple punches a little recklessly, throwing some looping left hands, looping right hands. And then I saw himself, he threw a couple big shots like that, got his composure, stepped back, and relaxed. And that is something we have not seen from Mr. Garbrandt in a very long time. In a very long time. And I was really, really proud to see what he did. What am I, his fucking dad? I was so proud. But I was really, that is, because Cody has so much talent and was the champion at such a young age. I don't really think he ever showcased it again since he had fought Dominic Cruz and won the title. Because if you guys go back and watch that performance against Dominic Cruz, it's a completely different guy from his last, I think he lost, what, 4 fights in a row at one point. But it's a completely different guy from those fights. Him using footwork, his boxing, he does have pretty decent wrestling, so he can defend the takedown, and he can take, he's taking guys down too, obviously. But it's so much fun to watch him when he's in that flow state, like he was this weekend, and I really hope we see that more out of him. He called out Davidson Figueiredo, and I saw a clip of him talking at the post fight press conference this weekend. Think they want to do that at UFC 300 and take my fucking money. That sounds fucking so good. This Figueiredo looked fantastic in his fight too. Who did he fight? I can't remember. Hold please. Let me take a look and see who he fought. This is embarrassing. Absolutely embarrassing. I don't have this prepared. And embarrassing, I don't have fucking this knowledge. This was like 2 weeks ago. And I can't remember. I watched the fight, too. Rob Font, that's who we fought. God damn it. Can't remember a goddamn thing. But anyway, yeah, fun to watch him fight. I'm really glad Cody's back out there. Back at it. Anyway, and then we had Irene Aldana versus Carol Rosa, and obviously a fight that wasn't on everybody's radar. I always enjoy watching Irene Aldana fight, but you know, I didn't think this fight was going to be anything special. I mean, Rosa was just tearing apart those legs for the first 5 minutes of the fight, first whole round. Tore apart, throwing just that same inside leg kicks, and Aldana did not check one. I don't think she checked a single leg kick that entire fight, which was fucking insane, and made zero adjustments. But what she did adjust to, she wasn't fighting on her back, not on her back foot, but she wasn't fighting at distance anymore and started closing that distance. And when she closed that distance, god damn, this fight turned into a war. If y'all missed this fight, I was going over to a buddy's house to watch this card, but excuse me, god, my morning burps. Anyway, I was going over to a buddy's house to watch this card, and I texted him. I was like, I hadn't left yet. And I'm like, are you seeing this fight? Have you seen this shit? I'm texting all my buddies that are over there, and he's like, what? No, we haven't turned them on yet. I'm like, what the fuck do you mean you haven't turned it on yet? Guys, if you're only watching the main card, if you're just getting into the UFC, even if you're like, I don't know who these guys are, you are missing some of the best fights on the card, possibly. And that happened this weekend because the only really interesting fight to watch, I mean, there were some good fights, obviously. I love watching every single fight. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, the majority of, like, the really good fights were all on the prelims this card. The main card was not as, there's higher stakes on the main card, but they weren't as entertaining, especially for the, you know, a casual fan, as the prelims were, in my opinion. There were so many finishes, so many great fights. And this Irene Aldana versus Carol Rosa fight was definitely one of them. I mean, that's got to be top 10 fights of the year, right? I'll have to go back and look at a list of, and go back and, you know, see what, how good some of these fights were this year. But I mean, that's got to be up there. It could just be, or like, you know, recency bias. But I don't know, guys. Fucking, that fight was absolutely incredible. And I'm surprised Carol Rosa, since she had that leg so hurt, she didn't throw any outside leg kicks, and she wouldn't throw any calf kicks. And especially since it was there literally the entire fight, she wasn't checking any leg kicks. I'm surprised she didn't make that adjustment and start going lower, because that's what a lot of guys tend to do when they start hurting one spot of the leg. They go to another, and they try to beat up the whole leg, but she just kept going to that inside leg kick. And I mean, I get it. It was working, but it just seemed like maybe she should have made an adjustment. And obviously, I think Aldana should have made an adjustment, not throwing literally anything to check that leg kick. But didn't matter. Ended up taking control in that second and third round. She looked fucking incredible. Put on definitely the fight of the night and one of the fights of the year. She's been involved in Irene Aldana in two amazing fights that I've seen. This one, and then she was involved in one. It was on the early prelims at UFC 228. It was the Darren Till versus Tyron Woodley fight card. She fought Luciana Pudilova on the early prelims. It was like the second fight of that card. And that fight's absolutely incredible as well. Every time I mention Irene Aldana, I always tell people, I'm like, go check out that fucking fight, because it's a fight a lot of people haven't seen, and it was just as good as that one. So, yeah. And then our featured prelim, which was supposed to be Josh Emmett and Bryce Mitchell, ended up being Alonzo Menafield and Dustin Jacoby. I thought this fight was going to be a lot more competitive than it was. I think Jacoby won either the first or second round. I can't remember. But Alonzo Menafield was landing that left hand all day long, knocked down Dustin Jacoby quite a few times. I mean, I think it was only once or twice. But against a guy who's as good of a kickboxer as Dustin Jacoby is, I'm really surprised he didn't win. You know what I mean? Like, Alonzo is more like, he's very, obviously he can stand and bang. He's very good. But Dustin's like a kickboxer. Like, I don't know what, let me do this again. Let me fucking not have my fucking research part together, but let's check out Dustin Jacoby's kickboxing record. I'm curious. No, not Dustin McCobe. I can't type. Find his kickboxing record. Dustin Jacoby kickboxing record. Let's find out. Oh, it was not very good. Wow. It was bad. It was not good at all. His glory record was 7-8. And his all-time record is 10-8. Why does everyone keep talking about this guy's kickboxing? I mean, obviously, it's a... I mean, if he was just straight-up kickboxing somebody, it'd probably be a different story. But that's, that is not as good as I was anticipating. I've been talking about this fucking guy's kickboxing for like 2 years and how good it is. And dude's fucking 10-8. 6-8. 7 and whatever. Glory record. What the fuck, dude? Never mind. Anyway. Still, interesting fight. Fun to watch. I always love watching those two guys fight. They're always incredible. Always put on a good show, at least. Hey, Dustin might have a bad kickboxing record, but he's fun to watch, okay? I think 7 of those wins or 6 of them were knockout in kickboxing. I think that's what it said. Is that what it said? Yeah, 7 wins, 6 knockouts, but then 8 losses. How many of those losses were knockouts? It doesn't say. Anyway, all right. Main card time, guys. Like I said earlier, main card wasn't the most exciting main card of all time, but this first fight was. Josh Emmett versus Bryce Mitchell. Guys, there were 2 strikes landed this entire fight, both by Josh Emmett. Bryce landed zero strikes. He was 0 for 3. And then Josh Emmett landed one of the fucking hardest right hands I've ever seen. That guy, especially for a featherweight, hits like a goddamn Mack truck. He's built like a Mack truck. He's like square. He's built rectangular. Him and Bryce Mitchell in there. Bryce looked like a high school kid. He's built like a high school wrestler. And then Josh Emmett is built like an actual Tonka truck. It's fucking nuts. It is nuts. And that was probably the scariest knockout I've seen since Ben Askren got knocked out by Jorge Masvidal. There's 2 categories of knockouts in my opinion. There's knockouts that make you go, oh shit, oh holy shit, that was fucking nuts. And there's knockouts that make you go, oh no. And this knockout was one of those that make you go, oh no. I mean, when he started having a seizure in the octagon, that was scary. That was like actually scary. I've never seen one that bad. You know, sometimes guys stiffen up and they shake for a second, but like, I have never seen a guy wake up and then have a seizure and then go back out. That was actually scary, but I'm very glad Bryce Mitchell is doing well. He posted on his Instagram the other day a little clip of him saying thank you to Josh Emmett. Josh, what a good guy Josh Emmett is. He celebrated at the end there, but at the end of the night he was like, yeah, I don't really want to, you know, I don't really want to celebrate the win too much, you know, because, you know, we're worried for Bryce. And just what a great guy. And I guess he texted Bryce, called Bryce or whatever, and was like, oh, hey man, how you doing? Hopefully you're all right. Here's a little clip of Bryce Mitchell's Instagram post.
Hey y'all, I just watched the fight back and I wanted to give y'all my basically live reaction to it. My first thoughts were that was an incredibly hard knockout, and I'm really lucky I didn't get hurt any worse, because my head's not hurting. I feel just fine. I'm right back to work. This is that barn that I was working on when I took the fight. You can see, you know, Got a lot of work left to do, but that's what I'm up to, okay? But I want to let y'all know that I'm so happy with Josh Emmett because right after he knocked me out, he could have followed up with the hammer fist and it probably would have killed me. And he didn't even follow up with anything. You know, he was just happy with his knockout and he walked away. And I'm so gracious for that. I will forever remember that. And I love that whole team, that Alpha Male team. I love every single one of you guys. And thank you for not hitting me extra, Josh. It takes more of a man to actually do that. You know, everybody thinks you're more manly if you hit them after they go down. It's actually you're more manly if you walk away and care about that person. Thank you so much, Josh. And also, too, I want to thank Joe Rogan. God bless you, Joe Rogan. Thank you so much for what you said after that fight. You took command on that microphone and you said, do not let Mitchell stand. And you were absolutely right, Joe. I was totally out of it. I can't remember anything actually until they sat me down in that gurney in the back of the ambulance. So everything where it appears is that I wake up and I'm talking to Dana and talking to everybody. I don't remember none of that. That's not even me there. You know, that's like blackout drunk. Like I can't remember nothing. And it's actually worse than that because at least if you're drinking, you kind of have a memory of what happened. But anyways, I'm just so glad that they sat me down in that gurney and they got me out of there. They escorted me out of there. They had hands up under my armpits the whole time because they could see that I couldn't walk good. So thank you, the UFC, for how you handled that. And thank you, Joe Rogan, for being the one who stepped up on the microphone and making sure that it was known that I needed medical attention because you could tell I couldn't walk. If they would have let me walk down that cage by myself, I'd have fell and busted my head open. It'd have been terrible. It'd been a nightmare. So thank y'all for caring about me, Josh and Joe Rogan and UFC. You know, Dana White came in the cage afterwards. And I also fought in front of Chuck Liddell and Donald Trump. And I'm really happy about that. I remember looking at Donald Trump in the face. I remember looking at Chuck Liddell in the face. Like, it was a dream come true, and I'm right back to work on this barn here, so I'm not going to let any of this slow me down, and everybody's making fun of me for thinking that God protected me, and I'm telling y'all right now, he did, because I about met Jesus for real. I mean, it could have been way worse. I could have died, so I'm just so happy that I'm healthy, and that after that fight, you know, they really got me right to that ambulance and sat me down. And once I was sat down, my memory came back and I'm fine. But I'm glad that nothing else worse happened than what did. And, man, I got a lot to be happy for, and I'm blessed. And thank you and thank God. And I love y'all.
So just a nice message there from Bryce Mitchell. Love to see that. I'm really glad he's okay because that was quite the scary knockout. All right, then Tony Ferguson versus Paddy Pimblett. I don't know about you guys. I was not impressed with Paddy in this fight. He was gassed out after the second round. If this fight went five rounds, I don't think he wins that fight. When Tony was able to get up from that one of those takedowns in that third round, Paddy could not even get up. He had to wait for the referee to come in and stand him up and then got up slowly. Absolutely gassed. If he wanted to come in and make a statement for a top 15 spot, I mean, he's probably going to be in a top 15 spot at some point soon for some reason. But if that's what he was trying to do, he didn't do it. Did he win all three rounds? Yeah, he won all three rounds. Did Tony really hurt him? A little bit, yeah. You know, he hurt him a little bit, cut him up a little bit, got his nose bloody. Was Paddy impressive? No, he wasn't. He really wasn't. And I'm not a Paddy hater. I like the guy. I think he's fun to watch in interviews. He's fun to watch in the cage. He's got a lot of fans. I'm a fan of Paddy, but if he wanted to go in there and try to beat a 39-year-old 0-7 in his last 7 fights now, Tony Ferguson, he had to go out there and look impressive, and he did not look impressive one bit. So I don't know how he's going to make a case for a top 15 guy now. I mean, I think a lot of those guys in the top 15 manhandle that kid. Sorry. I like him. I'm hoping maybe it was a bad night. I'm hoping that's what it was. I'm rooting for the kid. He's fun to watch. I think he's great for the sport. He's a guy who talks a lot of shit, but he's not a fucking asshole. He's like a neutral, good Conor McGregor. And I love it. But yeah, if he wants to make a case for top 15, that's just not what that win did for him, in my opinion. I'm sorry. And then Shavkat Rakhmonov versus Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Thompson was only able to land 26 strikes in the whole fight. And Shavkat was able to get 8 minutes of control time. Guys, what'd I tell you? It's exactly what I told you was going to happen. I thought Shavkat was going to try to use his hands to get in close. It's exactly what he did. Took him down, controlled him on the ground for both rounds. Nullified all the strikes Thompson was trying to throw. And submitted him. Exactly how I thought it was going to go. I don't think he was going to stand there and bang with Wonderboy. But what he also said, he fought with a torn ligament in his ankle that he tore, I think, 6 weeks ago. So he said that kind of changed the way he was going to fight a little bit. He didn't want to stand and bang with him because he couldn't, I guess. But I still think he probably would have done the same thing. I would like to say if he didn't and he was wanting to stand and trade with Stephen Thompson, I would have loved to have seen that. But unfortunately, tore that ligament in his ankle, and homeboy's so tough. He was still training. He missed his sister's wedding, and he still got in there with one of the greatest strikers of all time in the UFC, in my opinion, and threw down and did very well. The kid's so much fun to watch. I love watching that guy. Undefeated. All finishes. I think that's like nine or ten submissions now. I think it's nine and like seven knockouts. Absolutely insane. Dude can do it all. I'm really excited for what that kid's going to do in the sport. I really hope he stays healthy. Alexandre Pantoja versus Brandon Royval. And I thought that fight was going to be a lot closer than it was. And it kind of was there towards the end. Pantoja pretty much controlled the vast majority of the fight on both aspects for the first few rounds. But, I mean, Royval there at the end was landing some big shots that were, I don't know if they were exactly hurting Pantoja, but Pantoja was not liking it. But Royval's problem was he couldn't stay on his feet. Pantoja was 8 for 14 on takedowns and over 15, almost 16 minutes of control time on top. And that's what's going to win you fights. I know a lot of the time these flyweight fights aren't always the most exciting to watch. To me, this fight was exciting because Royval's got that power. He could have shut the lights off at any moment, especially there at the end. It was looking like when Pantoja was getting a little tired, a little gassed. I wouldn't say gassed, but, you know, he was looking a little tired. Royval was able to take advantage of some stuff on the feet, and if Pantoja wasn't able to get him to the ground there, who knows what would have happened. Royval might have finished it. He threw like 300 punches. I think he landed over 200 of them. I mean, he was dominant on the feet. So luckily for Pantoja, he was able to get those takedowns and get out of there with the belt. His first title defense. I think Pantoja's going to be very, very good. I think he's going to be the next guy at flyweight, because for a while there it was just Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno switching titles back and forth. I'd love to see him fight Moreno again, but we'll see. I think Moreno's got a fight coming up. I can't remember against who, but we'll see what happens. Main event time, guys. I wish I had more exciting things to say about this fight, but I really don't. Weird thing about this fight, watching it live, like, if you see the stats on this fight, you would see just the stats and not the fight. You're like, Colby won. It's like, no, Leon won. I'm like, what? Leon landed 65 total strikes. Colby landed 109, but I think a lot of those were to the body when he had a top position there in the fifth round. To be fair, but I think like 57 of Leon's strikes were significant strikes. I don't know what a significant strike is, if I'm being honest with you. Because to me, a significant strike is like one that hurts somebody, like bad, like you get hurt. But I don't know. I think it's just any that land clean. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, Nothing really to write home about. Colby wouldn't engage at all. And then, I mean, he definitely lost, in my opinion. Was I drunk? Yeah. What do you want me to do? Not drink and watch the fights? But in a lot of people's opinion, too, if you go look at the verdict scorecard, Colby lost 1, 2, 3, and 4. And only won, like, the last 2 minutes of round 5 when he got on top, or 3 minutes, however long it was. And then he goes parading around the octagon like he fucking won, starts talking to Donald Trump and fucking thinks he won the fight, gets interviewed after, goes, I won that fight, that was the easiest fight of my career. It's like, Colby, you didn't even fucking engage the guy. I don't think Colby took more than fucking 18 steps forward the entire fight. He was standing at the distance, didn't want to get hit by Leon. And that was just an absolutely embarrassing performance. That was the worst we have ever seen Colby Covington. What is Colby known for? Pressure, 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 pressure. Didn't pressure him at all. He missed like his first takedown, couldn't get it secured, and then just fucking gave up. I think he went for like 3 takedowns the whole fight and got the one at the end there. I would have loved to have seen him do what he normally does and just pressure in on Leon and see if he can keep getting those takedowns, but I think he was so scared to get caught by Leon because he's such a good striker that he just didn't. He just stayed at the distance the whole time, and Leon just kind of picked him apart from the outside. If you're going to talk this much shit, Colby, you got to fight. You have to. You can't talk this much shit about Leon's fucking dead dad and how Leon's a pussy and this and that and 1776, blah, 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 blah. Like, shut the fuck up and fight. I don't get it. The act's over, dude. And at some point, I don't even know if it's an act anymore. I don't know. I don't know what the fuck is going on. It's not fun, dude. No one thinks you're cool except for 12-year-old fucking middle school students and casuals and guys that fucking have fucking 18 pieces of Trump merch. I am not interested in seeing Colby Covington fight ever again if that's how he's going to fight. And he's never getting another title shot. Fucking mark my words on that. Unless he goes and wins like 4 fights, 5 fights in a row. Fucking Dana's not giving him another title shot. And he's not going to win that many fights in a row. He's like 35 now. Who knows how long this dude's going to fight. He's going to probably fucking... I don't know what the fuck he's going to do. But just an abysmal performance by Colby. And I would still have liked to have seen Leon engage a little bit more too. But I think his whole plan in that fight was to counter Colby. And if Colby's not moving forward, then there's not really much you can do about that. But yeah, main event. Exciting. But that marks a bigger question. Who's next at 170 pounds? Let's play a fun game. Let's compare two records. I'm not going to tell you who these fighters are, but we're gonna state their records first, okay? Here we go. Fighter number one. Let's call him Fighter A. Fighter A is 21-3-1. 21 wins, 3 losses, 1 no contest. Since 2019 is 6-0-1. 6 wins, no losses, 1 no contest. And has 1 knockout and 5 decision wins. Fighter number two, let's call him Fighter B. 23 wins, 3 losses, 1 no contest. Did I say no losses? 23 wins, 3 losses, 1 no contest. Excuse me. Since 2019, 9 wins, 1 loss, 1 no contest. Has won 7 fights by decision, 1 knockout, and 1 submission. I'll give you guys a few minutes. Go ahead and deliberate. Let's try to guess who Fighter A is and who Fighter B is. You got those answers locked in? All right. Fighter A is Leon Edwards. Fighter B is Bilal Muhammad. See the similarities? Guys, I don't give a fuck if you think Bilal Muhammad is no fun to watch. I know this is a business, and this business tries to make money. and you don't think that fight will sell. It does. It should not matter. Bilal has not lost a fight since January 2019. He has won 9 fights since then and has not lost one since that one fight. I don't care if you think he's boring and the fight won't sell. Leon got a title shot too. One finish. He wasn't finishing guys. I know his style is more fun to watch because he's a kickboxer. But Bilal should be next. And if you're like, he can't sell the fight, put it underneath another fight. Have it at UFC 300. Here's what they should do. UFC 300. Don't have it as the main event. Don't have it as the main event. We could have another fight be the main event. But those two have to fight. That's the fight to make. Who else do you put there? You do not put Shavkat Rakhmonov. You do not put Shavkat Rakhmonov. I know he just won. Let's look at the rankings. Let's see who he should fight. So Leon, obviously, he's not going to fight Colby. Be cool if my computer would load. He's not going to fight Colby. He's not going to fight Usman. I think Bilal is ranked number 3. If my fucking computer would load, what the fuck? My computer will not load. This is fun. This is a really good content. Let me try it on my phone. No internet. I have internet, you fuck. Let's see. UFC rankings. Athlete rankings. All right, let's go to welterweight. Yeah, Bilal is ranked number 2. Shavkat's ranked number 3. You go Shavkat, Gilbert Burns, those two fight, and then you fight Leon and Bilal. That's it. Okay, that is it. That's the fight. Jeff Neal and Ian Garry are fighting. Stephen Thompson just fought. Sean Brady, I think, just fought. I think you could do Colby versus Sean Brady. I think you could, yeah, that's what you do. That's the fight. That's the fucking fight. End of story. If you don't put, if the next title shot does not go to Bilal Muhammad, I am going to be fucking pissed. I don't care what anybody fucking thinks. I don't care if you think he sucks. He's the decision king. It doesn't matter. That's the fight to make. If you were Bilal Muhammad, would you be like, I don't deserve a title shot because my style is not fun to watch? Fuck no. You want the shot. You deserve the shot. Give it to Bilal Muhammad. Fuck, it's not complicated. Okay, I'm done my little rant. That is it for the day, guys. I appreciate you guys tuning in. We're done with fights for the next, till the start of next year. I don't know what we're going to do next week. I think we're going to talk about some fun fights that I want to make. Josh wants to make. Make me the matchmaker, Dana. I'm going to have a whole fight card I'm going to make. I think we'll do that next week. That'll be fun. Hire me, Dana. Anyway, I appreciate you guys listening. I really do. I got to go. I got a tea time to make. But I'll see you guys next week. Have a good one.